Now, in Section 2, jurisdiction is going to be defined here, and we learned it in a way you've never learned before. Number 1, God's jurisdiction defined. Well, we've already done that in the Democracy versus Republic presentation. God's jurisdiction is the sovereign jurisdiction over everything that He created. Therefore, He is a ruler over all the things that He created, and that is His jurisdiction. The people hired the government employees, therefore, they have jurisdiction to govern over the government employees. We created the state, we created the national government, therefore that is our jurisdiction to govern them, and we govern them through constitutional law, and the Constitution is a contract that binds them down from illegal and extracurricular activities. The jurisdiction of the national government is the Constitution of the United States of America that allows them to perform minimum duties and responsibilities for with the people. It does not allow them to rob one sector of society to pay another sector to go to work. The state jurisdiction is the state constitution. It binds them down from doing anything that is outside those constitutionally defined duties and responsibilities. And anything that infringes upon our jurisdiction, we the people of the United States of America, is a violation of constitutional law. So now we've also defined individual jurisdiction as being anything that we did not give our government employees the right to do, that is our right to make those decisions as to whether we want to do those things or not. Now, the solution provided for changing jurisdictions is, if you are in the democracy, if you are a slave of the state with a Social Security number, you're in debt up over your heads, then the solution is you have to, number one, you have to get out of debt, because you cannot be free as long as you're in debt. You'll always be a slave to the lender. Number two, if you have a Social Security card, you are in debt because you owe your fair share of the national debt to the Federal Reserve for the benefits you've made yourself eligible for. Okay, next. You cannot have anything attached to that Social Security number, so therefore you want to close down everything associated with it. You'd want to return the card and cancel the insurance policy by sending that back to the Social Security Administration. Now, you don't care whether they accept it or not. We couldn't care less what they do with it, because that's their card. They have a right to do with it as they please. That account is their account. It's not yours. And the key to dissolving that relationship is you never use the Social Security number again for anything. Never again for anything. Now, of course, that creates a problem, because most of your employers in America, in the United States of America, will not allow people to work for them unless they have a Social Security number. So you can force that issue, or you can learn how to transition out of being a captive slave of the corporate state and into freedom and free enterprise. And I did that, and it was very successful for me. I'm sure God has given the talents to everyone to earn a living without being a slave of the mere corporate state. Now, we do have transitional tools to help people transition out of the system and into freedom and free enterprise, and we also have transitional tools to help people utilize complex business organizations that would interface with the system and set you either free or mostly free in order to do what you want to do without having to be strapped with all these government insurance premium payments for the benefits. Now we're going to take a look at employee-employer versus independent contractual relationships. As an employer, by the way, let's define self-employed to start with. Self-employed is the most ridiculous classification of employment that has ever been made, because as a self-employed individual, what you did was that you applied to the federal government for a federal tax identification number that's called an employer's identification number that you did not want to have, so you could be eligible for benefits that you did not want to be eligible for, so you could utilize or have those benefits available to offer those to employees that you did not want to have, so they'd be eligible for benefits that you did not want to give them, so you could deduct insurance premium payments out of their paycheck that you did not want to deduct and match them that you did not want to match, so you could send them to the federal government that you did not want to pay and be underneath in the first place. So where do you look for the correction? Back in the mirror again. Each one of these things was a voluntary contractual obligation. There's no law that requires you to have an employer's identification number or a taxpayer's ID number from the Internal Revenue Service. You have a right not to have those numbers. You have a right not to have a Social Security number. You have a right not to engage in a contractual relationship with those people. Now, employees working for employers means the employee has a Social Security number working for an employer who has an employer identification number. So those people are eligible for the benefits and they have to pay for them. So you want to transition out of that to the independent contractual status, which means that you don't have a Social Security number, or the free enterprise organization that you work through does not have an employer's identification number nor a taxpayer's identification number. It has foreign exempt accounts that's exempt to the USDC jurisdiction so that you can bank your money freely and spend your money freely without any filing, paying, or reporting. Now we're going to be proceeding on to session number 3, property ownership. I can't think of a better way to explain to you property ownership than to be talking about the way automobiles are purchased and registered. So what I want you to do is I want you to take another clean piece of paper, turn it sideways. On the left put democracy, on the right put republic. Now on the left hand side of the democracy, I want you to draw a box on the left and a box on the right. Now that's all on the left side of the democracy, and then below those two boxes I want you to draw one more box. In the bottom box, I want you to put in there you. On the top left box, I want you to put in there dealer, D-L-R for dealer. In other words, this is a automobile dealer. Now, I want you to, the scenario is going to be is that you're going to buy an automobile. Okay, so you have Federal Reserve notes. Now, on the left-hand side, draw one line and one S through the line. And then I want you to draw right to the right of it two lines and an S. Now, the one line through the S stands for Federal Reserve notes. And I call them Federal Reserve barter papers because it's not a redeemable instrument in value, so therefore it's not a note, because a note is required to be redeemable by the maker on demand at a specified place and a specified sum. And they will not redeem it except in another worthless piece of paper or a nickel copper slug, so therefore it's not redeemable money. It's a, people call them frauds. I call them just barter papers because you barter with them. And it's owned by the Federal Reserve. Now, the two lines through the S is lawfully defined as United States lawful money of account, which would be gold and silver. Now, the two lines over the S used to be a U on the bottom, which stood for United States money. And they just took off the U at the bottom and wound up with two lines through the S. Now, if you go out and you look at the old typewriters, you'll see that the dollar sign is two lines to an S. On the new computers, it's one line to an S. That's because the Federal Reserve was allowed to steal all of our lawful money of account, the gold and silver, and they were allowed to replace it with worthless Federal Reserve notes, in other words, counterfeit pieces of paper. So we allowed them to rob us of all of our wealth, and that has happened just since 1913. It's an incredible thing to consider how hard the people worked in this country to make this the wealthiest country in the world. Now all of a sudden, all of our gold and silver is in the hands of foreign international entrepreneurs. And on top of that, we have the largest national debt in the history of the world. We have the largest trade imbalance in the history of the world. We have more consumer debt than any other country ever in the history of the world. It's an incredible loss of rights to prosperity that we have suffered. And it's all been because we've allowed our very, very bad government employees to act dishonorably and to act treasonably and working to overthrow our jurisdiction and the Constitution of the United States of America. So anyway, the scenario is you have the Federal Reserve notes, not the dollars. And this is typically how people buy automobiles. You'll take the Federal Reserve notes up to the dealer, so draw a line up to the dealer. The dealer has a car that he wants to sell you. And you offer him the Federal Reserve notes, and he says, okay. You get the car, he gets the Federal Reserve notes, and you're both happy. Now, who do you get your title from? You get it from the state. Okay, so put the word state above the box on the right-hand side in the democracy. Now, you draw the line from the state down to you, showing that you get the title from the state. Now, the title is called, in reality, a certificate of title. It's not a title, it's a certificate of title in that automobile. In other words, it's not an ownership paper. Now, the question is, isn't that like you going to Sears to buy your lawnmower and you get your bill of sale from Ward's? Now, the dealer either had the right and the authority to sell you the car or he didn't. And he had the ownership papers on it or he didn't. So the question is how come you did not get the ownership papers from the dealer that sold it to you? Why did you get the ownership papers from the state? Did you make the state privy to your contractual arrangement when you engaged in the contractual arrangement with the dealer? Okay, we're going to take a look at how you did this. And we'll draw a box of, on the left-hand side above the dealer, and we'll put in that box $10,000 for the car, which is absurd nowadays. It would typically be $20,000. Well, we'll put in $20,000 to make everybody happier. Okay, we'll put in $1,200 for taxes, and we'll put in about $600 or so for transfer fees. And we're going to add that up, and that's going to be $3,800 total. And that's what the dealer told you that he wanted from you. To $20,000, I'm sorry, I says $3,800, that's totally ridiculous. It's $21,800 for the car in total. And he asked you if you would agree to that, and you said yes. He asked you to sign the contract, and you signed your name to it. Now, what did you sign your name to? You signed your name to a contractual agreement whereby you agreed to pay $20,000 for the car. Then you agreed to pay $1,200 to the state in taxes on the car. And if you had not signed that agreement, you would not have had to pay the $1,200 to the state. Then you agreed to pay $600 in transfer fees, license fees, transfer fees, etc., to the state. And you would not have had to pay that if you did not sign that piece of paper. But your signature authorized now the state, I'm sorry, correction, authorized the dealer to send to the state what is called an MSO, that is the manufacturer's statement of origin on the car, which is the ownership paper. Now, this is tragic. The state now is holding the ownership paper on the car. Now, in a constitutional Republican form of government, in a free country where we have the primary principle of a free country is we have the right to own and control property. Now, here you see what's happening. The con job is to trick us out of our property and put it under the ownership and control of the state, because they're now holding the ownership paper on the car, the manufacturer's statement of origin. So what they issue is they issue a certificate of title to you, which is an equitable interest certificate of equitable interest ownership in the car, and they're holding the lawful ownership in the car, i.e. the manufacturer's statement of origin. Now, where does the state get the authority to tell you that you have to have a driver's license from them in order to utilize that car? Well, they now own the car. They have the ownership paper. Now they can tell you that you have to comply with their rules of the road to use their car. Okay, so where does their authority come from to require that you put a license plate on that car in order for you to drive it? Well, that is their car. Now they have the right to require that you identify their car with their plate, so they can identify who it is that is using it and whether or not they're complying with the rules of the road that they establish for you, your use of their car. So where do they get the right to control now your use on the roads and force you to comply with the rules of the road for traveling in that car to your destination? Well, once again, it's because they own the car. Now they can say, if you're going to use our car, you have to use it according to our rules and regulations, and you have to comply with them all, or else you're not going to be allowed to use our car. And they can take it away from you anytime they want to without any due process of law in courts of justice, because that's now their car, it's not yours. You cannot use constitutional rights to establish a use of someone else's automobile freely. So everyone that's driving without a license in a car owned by the state are subject to, tickets for driving a motor vehicle without having a license, because that is their car, they have the right to use it. Remember when we talked about the software for computers? Software companies only sell the license to use their software. They never sell the software. If they did, you could go ahead and copy it and sell it. So they sell you the license, and if you use it contrary to the rules and regulations, they can sue you civilly or charge you criminally. Same way with the state. Now that the state owns the car, they're going to license you to use it. It's their car, it's not your car. Now they can tell you what to do with it, and if you do something with it they tell you not to do, then they can take it away from you anytime they want. They can charge you criminally and civilly. Okay, now let's identify this thing. So just draw a circle around Otto, you, and draw a circle around the state as well. And let's identify this relationship. This relationship is a situation whereby you put funds into this relationship in exchange for the use of a car, and the state wound up with the ownership papers on the car and has the power now to tell you what you can and can't do with it. This type of a relationship is identified as a trust relationship. In any kind of a trust, number one, you have to have a trustee, you have to have a trustee is spelled T-R-U-S-T-E-E, and trustor is spelled T-R-U-S-T-O-R, and you may or may not have an exchanger, E-X-C-H-A-N-G-O-R. So let's find out if this is operating as a trust arrangement by identifying whether or not these characteristics are in it. Number one, a trustor is someone who puts funds into the trust relationship. Okay, that would be you. You are the trustor. The exchanger is someone who exchanges the property for the funds and the paperwork, etc. So that's the dealer. He gave you the car for the funds, and he gave the papers on the car, the ownership papers, to the state. There would not have been a trust relationship if he simply gave you the car and the ownership papers for the funds, because there's no one else exercising trusteeship over the car. But since he gave the ownership papers of the car to the state, now the state is operating as a trustee over the car to tell you what you can and cannot do with it. So the state is a trustee on the property. Now, the definition of trustee is owner-controller. He now has the power in order to control your use of their car. Now, let's take a look at the certificate of title and what that is. The certificate of title gives you gives you equitable interest in that car, not ownership. In other words, you have a right to use it according to the state's rules and regulations, who is the owner. So the certificate of title is legally defined as a certificate of beneficial interest in this trust relationship. That means you're the equitable interest holder, and that is your equitable interest certificate that verifies that you have the right to sell that equitable interest in that car. Okay, now, let's talk about how we can undo this mess. Number one, this is going to be a revocable trust. And the reason for that is it's not specified to be irrevocable, therefore it's going to have to be a revocable trust. That means as a certificate of equitable interest holder, you have the right to revoke that trust. So number two, go ahead and revoke it if you want to kill their jurisdiction. And you would send the certificate of title back, i.e. the certificate of title in the motor vehicle, back to the state, revoking their trusteeship over the car and reclaiming ownership of it. And you would tell them in the letter that you're revoking their trusteeship, that you're reclaiming ownership over that automobile, and henceforth it will not be used or utilized in interstate commercial regulatory fashion, that it will not be used for profit gain or hire on the roads, and therefore you have a right to utilize it freely as a mode of moving from one place to the other as a natural common law right, and any interference with that will result in penalties and liens, in commercial liens, or any kind of a lien necessary in order to force this action. Okay, now you're going to ask them to acknowledge that they received it. If you have to, you're going to go down there and you're going to talk to them personally. You're going to tell them that you are reclaiming your right to have ownership and control over that car. They are no longer have any authority to exercise any control over it. And if their officers threaten, intimidate, and harass you in any way for the free use of that property, you're going to hold them personally responsible. Now, we want to take this one step further and say, okay, now how are we going to utilize this technique to buy and own a brand new automobile? Okay, now you're going to go to the dealer, and you can draw this on the right-hand side now, and you're going to draw two boxes. You're going to put you in one, dealer in the other. Now, you are going to take gold or silver dollars, or gold and silver dollars, that's two lines with an S through it, real dollars, to the dealer. And number one, you're going to be free, or you're going to be buying it in a free organization. And the reason for that is, rule of law, slaves have no right of property ownership. Therefore, you have to be free or utilize a free sovereign organization to do that. That means if you're not free, you might want to have a free sovereign trust to utilize to make that acquisition. So you're going to go to the dealer with the gold or silver or gold and silver, and you're going to make that as a tender, an offer for the car. And if he accepts that, he's going to give you the car for the gold and silver dollars. And if you demand the manufacturer's statement of origin, you will now have the ownership paper on the car. In other words, do not buy a car from a dealer unless he gives up the manufacturer's statement of origin to you for the gold and silver dollars that you pay for the car. Now you're going to have absolute ownership and allodium over that automobile. That will now be an automobile, it will not be a motor vehicle. An automobile never becomes a motor vehicle until you register that with the Department of Motor Vehicles. Now everybody's going to say, well, what happens if the gold and silver is not accepted by the dealer? Well, you're going to have another individual there standing right beside you. You're going to make this tender to the dealer. The dealer, if he refuses, say, I don't know what to do with the gold and silver. Say, well, you see this individual sitting over here? He's got the cash he'll give you for the gold and silver. So you give me the manufacturer's statement of origin, I give you the gold and silver, then you sell the gold and silver to him for the Federal Reserve notes. You're happy, you have what you want for the sale of the car. He's happy, he's got the gold. And I'm happy because I've got the car. Now everybody's satisfied. So just use an interface organization there, like an individual, to make this transition for you, so you wind up with sovereign free ownership of that automobile. Now, this is your own property. So you have now rights of property ownership here. That means you now have the right to identify that car as your car by putting your own plate on the back of that car. Now you can identify it as your property. Number two, now since you own that property, you can license yourself or license others to use that car according to your rules and regulations. Now that's exactly what the Department of Motor Vehicles is doing. All they're doing is, since they don't have the right to regulate our free travel, they've conned us out of ownership of our cars so they could regulate our use of their cars. So we have to get back ownership of the cars. Now we have a right of free travel on the roads again. Now what they're trying to claim is they have the right to control the roads because the roads are under their trusteeship. I have news for them. We bought and we paid for those roads. Those are our roads. The Constitution strictly prohibits them from interfering on our rights of free travel by not giving them the power to regulate our free travel. So therefore, that's outside their jurisdiction. That's our jurisdiction. It's not their jurisdiction. We cannot ever allow them to be able to seize that kind of a control of our rights of free travel, because then we're going to have these communist roadblocks over the place checking to be sure our papers in order so we can pass through the gate. Now, that's not too far-fetched, saying that we're going to have communist roadblocks all over the place checking to make sure your papers in order so you can pass through the gate. What is, a stop by a police officer who does not have a warrant to pull you over? He's got no injured party there. He doesn't have any warrant or complaint against you, and he pulls you over to shake you down on a roadside check. You see, they have the authority to pull over their automobile, and that's why they're doing it. So what that is, that's a communist roadblock, to check and make sure your papers are in order so you can pass through the gate. That's not far-fetched at all, because I've had them tell me, well, your papers are in order, sir, so you may go through the gate. So just stop and think about these things and what's going on here. You know, the officers have got no business interfering with our free movement unless they have some kind of a warrant issued by a court in order to detain us. And when they do pull you over, you're under arrest. And if they don't have a complaint filed by an injured party to pull you over, you know, with a warrant signed by a judge, they've exceeded their authority and their jurisdiction. And quite frankly, if you fight these traffic cases and you fight them very, very hard, you're going to find out that you'll win every one of them. And I want to interject here, when you go to the dealer to buy an automobile, as a compromise, you could always give them a minimum of 21 silver dollars plus corporation notes of undetermined value, and that's the way you'd write up your contract, corporation notes of undetermined value. Now we're talking about the real silver dollars that have to be at least 212.5 grains of silver. And they coined those up through 1933, and they stopped coining them at that time, and they started coining them again in 1986. They're called Walking Liberties, and the golds are called Gold Eagles. So the gold and the silver is being coined again. We have access to our lawful money account. It's there for us to access our jurisdiction. All we have to do is utilize it, get rid of the Federal Reserve notes, bring the gold and silver back in, buy our property with it. We have rights to property ownership again. Now, the reason I'm suggesting you take at least 21 Walking Liberty silver dollars, and they're sometimes referred to as Eagle silver dollars. The reason you do that is Article 7 of the Bill of Rights, Constitution of the United States of America, and I quote, in suits of common law where the value in controversy shall exceed $20, and when they're talking about $20 in the Constitution, they're talking about real gold and silver dollars. They're not talking about counterfeit dollars, i.e. Federal Reserve notes. The right of a trial by jury shall be preserved, and no fact tried by a jury shall be otherwise re-examined in any court of the United States and according to the rules of the common law. So that's why we're going to do the 21 silver dollars or more thing, to secure it in a lawful money account by common law, so we can be entitled to the course of the common law in any kind of a process that would attempt to infringe upon our free ownership and use of that newly acquired property. Okay, next we're going to talk about miscellaneous personal property, and that's really easy. And I want slaves to be aware of the fact that are benefited by the government that you have no property ownership whatsoever if you're a slave of the state utilizing Federal Reserve notes to make your acquisitions. That's because you're using someone else's money to buy the property. The rule of the law is that you cannot buy something with something that you do not own. If you're using Federal Reserve notes to buy something, since they were never sold to you, since they were rented into circulation by the Federal Reserve, anything you buy with them vests ownership back of the Federal Reserve. So all the miscellaneous personal property that you have acquired with Federal Reserve notes are not yours, they are theirs. To highlight this, I'm aware of a lady in Sacramento, California, that was taking on the government on tax issues, and she told everybody that they could take anything they wanted, but they could not ever get to her addresses. And of course, the government had infiltrated her lectures and had heard that. So when they leaned and levied against her, the agents walked into her house, upstairs, into the upstairs room, into her closet, and took all of her dresses and looked at her and says, "We're doing this just to show you that we have the right, the authority, and the power to do it." And they walked away with those dresses. Why? She was a slave of the state. She bought them with Federal Reserve notes. They made a fraudulent lien against her. They levied against her, and then they went ahead and stole her. Why? They were only taking back property that they already owned. It wasn't her property. It was their property. Why wasn't there any due process law through courts of justice? That's because you cannot claim a constitutional protection over someone else's property. Now we're going to talk about real property and get another sheet of paper, draw a line down the center, and once again, democracy on the left and republic on the right. And we want to define, number one, how properties are acquired in the democracy. And by now you should be aware of the fact that the constitutional republican form of government operates exactly 100% the opposite of the democracy. So in identifying the democracy, we want to identify exactly how it is you go about acquiring real property. Number one, you're going to utilize Federal Reserve notes to acquire the real property. So in the constitutional republic, you'd use gold and silver dollars. So you'll put a undollar sign on the left-hand side, one line through an S, a dollar sign on the right-hand side, which is two lines through an S. Number two, you would use deeds, and if you look at your deeds and read them very carefully, you see they contain grantor, grantee terms, which are trust terms, and that should make you realize that that is going into a trust agreement. So instead of doing deeds now, we're going to do bills of sale on the property. Okay, the next consideration is that you might want to get termite inspections on the house because it might be required when you go through the escrow companies because you're going to borrow in order to buy the property. So put down there borrow. Now, on the right-hand side, you're going to say pay in full because if you're going to be free, you cannot borrow money because you're always going to be a slave to the lender. So no borrowing. And you're not going to have a Social Security number. So therefore, the banks are not going to loan you any money on this property without that Social Security number. Because without the Social Security number, you cannot prove that you have any income. Without filing returns to the government, you cannot prove that you have income. Therefore, they're not going to be too interested in doing any kind of a business with you through the banks. And of course, you don't want it because that just enslaves you to that system. On the left-hand side, I want you to write insurance because since you're borrowing in order to buy this piece of property, the lender is going to require that you have insurance on it. So on the left, insurance. On the right, no insurance because now you have the right not to have any insurance on it. Now you can depend on the Lord for your insurance. On the left-hand side, write register property with the state, which means on the right-hand side, you're going to put do not register the property of the state. Because on the left-hand side, what you'll do is you'll register without the tax assessor, then you'll record it with the county recorder's office. Now, I don't have any problem recording with the county recorder's office, but if they require that you register with the state tax assessor first before you go to the county recorder's office, then you don't want to do either one of them. So no registration with the state. And that means that the state over here gives you protection. In other words, if there's some kind of a challenge as to your lawful ownership over that property, the state on the left-hand side would give you protections from the state. On the right-hand side, you'd write no protection from the state because that would not be under the jurisdiction anymore. You would have revoked their trusteeship over the property. On the left-hand side, now you're going to write property taxes. On the right-hand side, now you're going to write no property taxes. And the reason for that is that when you register property with the state, that puts it under their trusteeship. It gives them the power then to tax you. And the legal definition of property tax is trustee fees. Since you put it under the trusteeship, they now have an expense to manage that property, to oversee it, to send out bills for it, and give you protective type services in the event that someone else challenges you, saying that that's their property, it's not your property, if it's recorded in your name. Now you have a recorded instrument to prove that it's yours, not theirs. So you'll lose all that protection by not registering with the state. Next, if it's not registered with the state, it's unlikely you're going to find someone to buy it without a recorded deed with the state, because they're going to be fearful that they don't have a good clean title on the property. So you'd have to find some other sovereign to sell it to, which it could be a negative. But of course, if you're going to keep the property forever, that's going to be a great benefit, because now you can build on the property whatever you want, as long as you do not do something that infringes upon someone else's right to life, liberty, and property. The negatives, then, for buying property via the way of the democracy is that you have to pay taxes on it. The government can tell you what you can and cannot do with the property. You have to ask them for permission before you do anything. And then, of course, some of the benefits are, well, it's registered with the state. Slaves that want to buy it are going to be able to borrow funds on it, and or maybe more easily going to be able to buy it because they see a registered deed on it. They feel comfortable. They're getting good title. That would give them a comfort zone for the acquisition of it. Now, when you go over to the Republican form of government here, we're not going to have any deeds on that property. It's not going to have any insurance. The people that come to buy it are going to have to pay for it in full. They're not going to be able to get a loan on that property. So have positives and negatives on both sides. You have to just decide whether or not it's worth it to you to do this, and that's more based on what you want to accomplish. It may not be a financial advantage to try to pull the property out of the system, and it may be, but more important is whether or not it's something that you want to challenge. And there may be a challenge on it, because the government, being the trustee over the property, may hold that you don't have a right to do this, and you may have to have a legal challenge in order to support your action. But you'll be on solid ground if, number one, you're free or have a free organization that's doing this. Number two, you revoke their trusteeship over the property. It's been bought in lawful money account, and it's not being re-registered under the trusteeship. Now, I want to define property taxes as being the trustee fee. As I've already said, this is a trustee fee that you're paying the government for being the trustee over the property. They have an administrative expense to administrate this. You have to remember that when you put it under their trusteeship, that what they did with it is they collateralized the property for bonds to build schools. Now the question is where did they get the power to collateralize that property to give it to the banks to borrow funds to build schools? Well, they got it from you. When you record that property with them, it puts it under their trusteeship. As a trustee, they have now the right to hypothecate that as an asset to the banks to get those funds to build the schools. Now, I don't know about you, but I don't want to register my property with an agency that's encumbering it to build schools. And the reason I don't want to do that is because you can't trust them. If you have placed this property under the trusteeship, they have the power to encumber it for so much in loans to do one thing or another that your property tax can eventually get higher than what the monthly payment is. And you probably have noticed how much the property taxes have escalated over the last 20 years. I know a lot of homes now, people are paying more in property tax per month than what you ever paid for that same size of a home 20 years ago. I can remember one time when I had a two-bedroom house for $75 a month. That included principal, tax, insurance, and interest. And the same two-bedroom home today would probably be in the neighborhood of $600 to $700 a month. And the taxes would probably be running about $1,200 per year. Well, if we take 75 times 12, we're going to be looking at $900 per year that I was paying on my two-bedroom home. And now that's in principal taxes and interest insurance, a whole ball of wax. And now it's likely that you'd pay $900 per year just for taxes. Now I want to provide you the solution for getting out of debt. I know a lot of you are confused. You don't know how to get a debt. Debt breeds debt, so the longer you live, the more debt you accumulate, it seems like. And every time you want something, you have to go out and borrow to get it instead of being able to save. And I'm going to give you the reason why you can't save, and the reason why you cannot pay for things in full, the reason why you have to go into debt to get everything that you want. Okay, so on the left-hand side, we're going to do another sheet now. Draw a line down through the center. On the left-hand side, you're going to call the democracy, and the right-hand side, the republic. Okay, number one, you're going to put down there Social Security tax. And the reason you're going to do that first is because everything else comes off of that Social Security number. You've got to find, once you eliminate that Social Security number on everything, you cease to use it again, these penalties are no longer going to apply to you. So Social Security tax on the left-hand side. On the right-hand side, you're going to write no Social Security tax. On the left-hand side, under that, you're going to write income tax. On the right side, you're going to write no income tax. On the left-hand side, you're going to write labor and industries insurance. And that would be an insurance imposed by the state for having employees that are working on the job. On the right-hand side, you're going to write no labor and industries insurance. On the left-hand side, you're going to write business licenses. On the right-hand side, you're going to write no business licenses. On the left-hand side, you're going to write driver's license. On the right-hand side, you're going to write no driver's license. On the left-hand side, we're going to write automobile license. On the right-hand side, no automobile license. On the left-hand side, we're going to write marriage license. On the right-hand side, no marriage license. On the left-hand side, you're going to write automobile insurance. On the right-hand side, no automobile insurance. On the left-hand side, you're going to write life insurance. On the right-hand side, you're going to write no life insurance. On the left-hand side, you're going to write disability insurance. On the right-hand side, you're going to write no disability insurance. On the left-hand side, you're going to write health insurance. On the right-hand side, you're going to write no health insurance. That's because when we transfer over to the constitutional Republican form of government, we're going to go to God for our needs, ask Him for our protection. We're not going to go to the democracy anymore and have them tell us everything in the world that we are or are not going to do. Now, let's just add this up. We're going to add up in the democracy the cost of Social Security tax, so add a plus there, the cost of the income tax, the cost, add a plus there, the labor and industries tax, add a plus there, the cost of the business license, add a plus there, the cost of the driver's license, add a plus there, the cost of the automobile license, add a plus there, the cost of the marriage license, add a plus there, the cost of the automobile insurance, add a plus there, the cost of the life insurance, add a plus there, the cost of the disability insurance, add a plus there, the cost of the health insurance, add a plus there. And you might want to list some other items below that. And now what you want to do is put a line under all the pluses and you want to add them up. Now, when I add mine up, it equals poor, broke, no savings, and starving for freedom. Because the first necessity of freedom is to be financially secure. And if you're paying all these expenses, you're not saving anything. You're borrowing for everything you need. Therefore, you have all these monthly payments to pay, and therefore you have to go to work to earn funds to pay debt. Now, this is the definition of the average individual in the system. At a young age, they decide that they want to have a new house like mom and dad. They want to have a new car like mom and dad. So typically speaking, the husband and wife both go out and get a job. And then they utilize that leverage of income to go out and buy a new house, to buy a new car. Now they have all these big monthly payments. Now the husband and wife have to go to work at a slave job to earn funds to pay debt. And that's their primary requirement. They're not working at a job that they like or love. A lot of people are going to work nowadays at jobs they absolutely hate just for one reason, to get funds in order to pay debt. And the reason for that is that their objective was to get the things first and pay for them later. Now, that going into debt puts them into a bondage of slavery, working a job that they hate in order to pay the bills. Now, what we want to do is we want to reverse that. So over here in the constitutional Republican form of government, we see that we don't have any of these expenses. We have eliminated those expenses, which means that if you add up all the expenses for all these different items, add it up in one big lump sum and take that as a monthly amount, take that times 12, that's how much you will save per year if you do not have those expenses. Now that means you can accumulate wealth, and you can buy things by paying for them in cash. Now you have no monthly payments, and because you have no monthly payments, now what you can do is decide what it is you want to do for a living that makes you happy, where you don't have to be a slave for someone else. Something that stimulates you, something that excites you, and something that you do not for the money, but for the love of it. And if you wind up doing something for the love of it instead of the money, to get money to pay bills, you're going to find out you're going to be substantially more stimulated, substantially more happy, substantially more prosperous in what you're doing. At this point, and as you're listening to this tape, this might be starting to look like an elephant to you, and that it's impossible to swallow an elephant, so how in the world am I going to be able to do all this? Don't look at the elephant. The only thing you look at is the first bite. If this has some desire for you, whatever you do, ignore the whole elephant. Only look at the leg in the first bite. Go after that one leg. And what you do is you keep on taking a bite until all the legs of the elephant are gone and he cannot run away. And now since he can't run away, now you can keep on eating until the whole elephant is gone. So we're just going to take this just one bite at a time. Review these tapes time and time and time again. And start, taking a look at what it is you can make in a transition with. And just concentrate on the first bite, do the first bite, and after you get the first bite done, go get another bite. That way, it's not going to seem complex or difficult. And don't be thinking that you have to do, if you want to become free, don't think you have to be doing it overnight. The reason for that is I studied obsessively for 6 years, and I taught excessively for 6 years. I was obsessed with this day and night for 7 days a week for 6 years. Before I could honestly say that I had taken myself out of the system and I was free from it. And I made it a full-time activity. Now, we don't have that problem anymore. We have information now I didn't have then. I didn't know where all the penalties were coming from, and I had to discover that before I was able to make the correction. Now it's easy to do it. You don't have to face any criminal penalties or prosecution or go through any of the trials and tribulations that I went through. All you have to do is concentrate on taking the first bite and do it in a way that allows you to remove yourself from the debt and start saving funds and being able to pay for everything in full, concentrate on that number one, and now we can start knocking off the other things one at a time.